Welcome back to Open House with Mark Sewick and Corey James Moran, brought to you by the Mark Sewick team at Keller Williams, a Greater Rochester real estate podcast. This is episode number 4, and today we're going to discuss some of the other ramifications of the current market. And we'll dive into that a little bit more here in a moment, but if we could, again, if you are listening to this episode number 4, certainly that means there's 3 other. I'm a math wizard.
Is 4 minus 1 is how much, Corey?
Hold on, let me get my calculator. In the very first episode, if you haven't listened to it, we did an overview of the market. In the past 2, we focused in on the expectations if you're a seller, the expectations if you're a buyer. Certainly encourage you to go and take a listen to that if you haven't yet. And we certainly do appreciate you telling any friends you know that have even a mild interest in real estate. You know, I work with so many buyers and I work with so many first-time buyers, and it really is an education to them every single time that we start to have that talk. And it certainly doesn't hurt to start that a little bit early, even maybe before you're considering purchasing.
That talk being what? Could you be specific?
Absolutely. Very, very kind of simple things of, well, you should probably be pre-qualified right now. Mm. If you want to make an offer, you need to have a letter from your bank, unless you're going with a cash offer, of course. You need to have a letter from your bank saying that you're pre-qualified for X amount. As the listing agent on our team and handling most of that, Mark, have you, in this market certainly, would you accept an offer from someone that didn't have the backing of a bank, even a letter?
Well, I mean, the reality is, and it's not meant to be unkind, but if somebody... At the moment, just before we started recording, Yvonne, our transaction coordinator, let me know that we've got 12 offers that were written on a property, a ranch in Webster. If any one of those offers does not have a pre-approval letter attached to it, it's going to be thrown into the can, because we will have 11 other very, very strong offers.
Sure, but if you don't know any better, you might walk into it thinking, well, it's like going to the store, right? I'll take that house over there.
Yes. Yes.
And it's just simply not. So it's good to kind of have that overview. And that's one of the things we're trying to provide here, with a bit of an education, too, of kind of what to expect.
And so are you finding that your clients are appreciative of what are the lessons?
Absolutely.
Actually, I would imagine that they're probably a bit incredulous when you start to have some of these conversation with them.
Honestly, the ones, at least, that I've been working with have been pretty open-minded. And a lot of them have been very honest, just coming into it saying, we don't know what we're doing. And I said, well, good. That's why you have me. That's the point.
That's
okay.
That's great. And I would imagine that, given how competitive it is and the water cooler, do we still have water cooler conversations?
Are people in offices now?
I'm wondering. So we'll put heavy quotes around the phrase.
Sure.
The water cooler conversation that everybody's having has to do directly with the real estate market. So I would imagine that these buyers that you're working with are realizing how difficult it is to purchase property these days. And I would imagine that they're very, very grateful for any guidance that you're offering.
Absolutely. And happy to give it. Certainly that's my job as
yes.
representing them to not only guide, but to educate and inform. So again, that's kind of why we are here to do that, to give you a bit of an education and try to explain it a little more, so you have more of that knowledge base, which is a nice lead into our main topic. Again, discussing just, and there's so many aspects of it, this quite honestly is going to probably be a several part series, the other ramifications of the market that we're seeing right now. I want to begin with maybe debunking what a lot of people seem to think may be some repeated history. I don't know about you, Mark, but I have had a lot of people ask me about this, and some have even said it as if it is factually going to happen, that what is happening now with the real estate market is going to be a repeat of the crash that happened in the mid-2000s. And I know that we have had a lot of conversations that we don't believe that is going to be the case, thank goodness, because that didn't seem like fun.
Yeah, that was. I mean, we were lucky locally in that it wasn't nearly as treacherous or devastating as it was nationally, but boy, it was ugly nevertheless.
Yeah, we'll get into a bit of a history lesson, because again, it's one of those things that I think people certainly remember, but maybe the facts of it not quite exactly as fresh in your mind. And it's important to rehash history so that we don't repeat it, of course.
Well, thankfully, I don't think that we are repeating history. The circumstances which led to the crash, the decline that took place, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, things are so remarkably different. For instance, speculation. A lot of A lot of buyers back then were purchasing property not because they were thinking about living in it, but they were purchasing these homes because they wanted to rent the properties.
Okay.
So speculation was, and some of the stuff that was going on was really insane. You would have somebody who would write an offer on a property with a low doc or a no doc mortgage. The bank would loan 105% on a property. And then you would have these renters, these speculators, collecting rent month after month after month, knowing full well that they were never going to pay their mortgage. Jeez. And after 2.5 years, they had put no money down. And 2.5 years later, the bank would finally catch up and foreclose on these speculators. That was one of the big reasons. But then there were also, this is also the area in which Madge from the secretarial pool was coming in. She was making $42,000 a year. She would come in with the new Gucci purse or the Prada handbag that she purchased over the weekend. And she was spending $1,250 on such a thing. So people thought about credit in a way then that is very, very different from the way that we're thinking about credit today. For instance, back then you would be living in a beautiful yellow house in some leafy suburban neighborhood, and you saw the blue one down the street. Exact same house, but you suddenly liked blue, you wanted to move out of yours, and people would literally, they would move on average every 4 to 7 years.
Wow, yeah.
So, for reasons that weren't really solid, good reasons. People are staying in their homes much longer now.
So, yeah, what is the average now? It's hasn't it doubled? It's what, 8 years?
It depends on what report you're looking at.
Sure.
There are some reports that are saying 8 years. You and I think have just recently read some reports. There are other reports that I've shown that show 12 years, the wow. average amount of time. So people are much, much more cautious with their money today than they were back then. The costs associated with buying and selling property, commission alone, 6%. And then you add in the taxes, the New York State taxes that are due here in the area. Moving expenses, hiring movers. It's very, very expensive. And people are realizing, I think I'm going to stay in my house a few years longer.
Again, so much goes into this and why it is a different situation. What are some other things that you've observed or think are the reasons why we will not see a repeat?
We were on a conference call the other day with Genesee Regional Bank, with Majua, who is our mortgage broker, and he brought up a really interesting point. I believe it's over the course of the next 6 weeks, there are several thousand real estate transactions that will be closing. They will actually have transferred title. When those deals transfer title, the appraisers will suddenly have several thousands of new appraisals that they can fall, new valuations that they can fall back on. So one of the difficulties that appraisers have had the past few months is the fact that they're looking in the rearview mirror. They're looking at sales that were taking place last August, September, October, and those sales weren't reflective of the fervor that has played out this year. Well, suddenly over the course of the next few months, we're going to have appraisal. So that's going to help to stabilize some of the concerns, that buyers have or that the public in general has about a correction. So
now, Mark, would you say, and certainly there's so many factors that went into play of what happened before, but would you say that one of the big factors in play was that, quite frankly, banks were giving loans to people who shouldn't have been getting those loans?
Well, Madge from the secretarial pool, yeah, was suddenly buying a $400,000 property because the phrase, it was no doc and low doc loans, which basically meant, do you have a pulse?
Right.
If you've got a pulse, and we're going to give you money, and we're not going to simply give you money. It's one of the other reasons that I don't think that we are going to be facing any kind of a crash this time around is because the banks are looking at higher credit scores. People are being far more conservative than they were, but banks aren't loaning 104 or 107,000, 107% on any given property. They're loaning 95% of the value, but those loans are backed by the federal government. Most of the time, they're loaning properties that are that have at least 10% down. So those are very, very safe loans.
And they learned their lesson, is pretty much the main gist, right?
They were very greedy 12, 13 years ago, and they got bit.
Well, I pulled some interesting stats from how it was back then, and I'm willing to bet that the banks are being more careful right now because, first off, they don't want it to happen again. But secondly, because in 2008 alone, the U.S. government allocated $900 billion, that's with a B, dollars to special loans and rescues related to the housing bubble.
Yeah.
You can't count on that happening again.
No. I mean, most especially when we're looking at how many, was it a $3 trillion package, relief package last year associated with COVID? And now we got a $1.9 trillion infrastructure package that is being proposed this year. I mean, that's a lot of money. The money simply isn't there. But not only did the banks get burned 12 years ago, 13 years ago, the banks are more highly regulated, and so the federal government isn't allowing for these banks to make these outrageous loans because the federal government doesn't suddenly want to find themselves on the hook for another $900 billion.
Which, especially right now, could they even do it? I mean, it seems kind of like money's being printed at this current juncture, but they don't want to do that any more than they have to, certainly. So for anyone who has had the doomsday scenario in their mind that it's happening again, and this time, I mean, if what happened before happened now, combined with the pandemic, combined with that and the difficulty that our economy is having because of that, I mean, the ramifications of that would be even worse. So we should be certainly thanking our lucky stars that it doesn't appear that that's going to be how this plays out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think this report that you're referencing, wasn't the figure something in the neighborhood of Americans are currently sitting on $21 trillion in home equity? That's a lot of money. And that wasn't necessarily happening before. So
absolutely. So good news, obviously, for anyone.
Good news.
For everyone, really.
Yeah. And again, I had mentioned this earlier on, we were very fortunate locally in that there was a correction, but the correction that Rochester has never, well, actually until this year, in years gone by, Rochester was never a city that saw an 8%, a 9%, a 10% increase in the value of property year after year after year. We plotted along very, very slowly. So when the recession, when the housing market crash took place, there were a couple of years when we saw a 4% decline in the value of property. The following year, I think it was a 6% decline. But we didn't see these precipitous crashes, these falls that were occurring elsewhere. And our recovery was a lot quicker. This is the year, however, where suddenly we are starting to see some real serious increase in the value of our local property. The first quarter alone, I think we saw a 14% increase versus the first quarter of the year 2020. So people have more money in their pocket, but again, these loans, they're not speculative loans. They're based on real numbers, on actual credit, real money being put down as down payment. So I think we're in a good place.
But that's the other thing that some people out there, and again, I don't know where they're getting their sources from, but again, they seem to say as if it is fact, and maybe it's just because facts have kind of gone wayside a little bit the past couple of years, but that they say this is fact. Oh, well, that's great. That person sold their house for $100,000 over, but whoever bought that, it's not going to hold that value. And that just goes back to what you said about appraisals.
Right.
It appears as though it will be holding that value.
Yeah. Back in January, February, as you know, the team and I, we were having lots of conversations about the fact that we needed to protect our buyers because there was going to be a correction. And then January became February, and February became March, and March became April. And each of those months, the number of buyers who were paying these outrageous sums of money just continued to increase. So it's basically now, at this point in time, a new high water mark.
Now, that opens up the question of what does that mean for people who aren't even in the game right now? It's just those who just have houses, not necessarily buying or selling them. I'm sure you've looked around if you're listening right now, and you've probably seen some signs pop up. If those homes in your neighborhood are going at the rates that they're going at, that we're seeing, it's going to affect you as well.
Absolutely. It is going to affect these homeowners. But one of the things, there's still, first of all, not enough inventory. So as we've said, I think probably every podcast, this being our fourth, the number of properties on the market for sale 5 years ago, there were 7,500 units. Today, there are fewer than 1,000. So it's not as though people are suddenly seeing these outrageous valuations and deciding that they're going to be putting their house on the market for sale. They, first of all, again, as we've stated a few times, people are more conservative. They want to stay in their home. They want to improve their home. They want to build equity. They don't want to incur the costs associated with moving. But if somebody does decide that they want to cash in, the question becomes, where do they go?
Yeah.
I mean, we've got a number of people who have moved into apartments thinking that next year there will be a correction and they'll be able to sell high, buy low. I'm not quite certain that that's going to take place at this point in time.
Yeah, just the fact that the watermark is here and this is what it's going to be.
Yes.
Again, specifically speaking to our market, and we've mentioned this in previous podcasts, just compared to the rest of the country, we have been pretty lucky that it's been very low for how long? Forever, basically?
Forever. But it is offset by taxes.
Right. Yeah, so, well, there's that.
So we do have this. So you go down to Florida and you're looking at, you know, $14 per thousand of assessed value or $7 per thousand of assessed value. Here, if you own a $100,000 property, you're paying $3,700 a year in taxes. You own a $200,000 property, you're paying $7,400, $7,500 per year in taxes. So that has kept our real estate valuation artificially low. But that also creates a problem moving forward. Municipalities traditionally have been at full assessed value, meaning that if a property is worth $100,000, it's going to be assessed at $100,000, and then you multiply that by your 37% tax rate, and that's where you're coming up with these numbers. However, what's going to happen in the years to follow if suddenly we're seeing a 14% increase in real estate valuation? That's great that you're sitting on all this equity, but it doesn't mean that you've got the cash in hand to actually pay your municipal treasurer an additional 14% in taxes.
Sure, which obviously opens up a whole other can of worms that needs to be figured out.
Yes.
Have we heard anything yet of is this being discussed yet? I think you said in a previous episode that it's something they should be getting on soon.
Actually, I just heard, I believe it was Berkeley Breen has actually just ran a story a day or two. I think you may have actually
done
that to me.
Yes, yeah,
to
tell news
that
NBC.
So my faltering memory, tell me what it is that my faltering memory is grasping for.
Yes, yeah, he did an investigation into reassessments. And that, again, as we're seeing so many of these homes go so above asking price, they're going to be reassessed closer to the value of the sale versus, you know, what they were. And there was people that were getting sticker shock in their neighborhoods, kind of like I mentioned earlier, this is affecting everyone, where you're suddenly seeing, the assessed value of my home just rose by $71,000, which was a woman in Chilai. And that obviously led to her panicking because in her mind, well, now my taxes are going to go through the absolute roof.
Yeah, I mean, she's looking at a $2,200, $2,500 increase in her taxes. That's $200 a month. That's a lot of money.
It is. And now Berkeley dug into it, and there is a state law where the municipality cannot raise the taxes more than 2%, I believe. So
right,
there is a cap on it, but still, think about someone who budgets to the dollar. And there are so many people out there who are like that. You throw in even that extra cost, another 2%, that can throw them upside down.
Absolutely. The municipalities are going to have to be very, very careful. Yes, municipal coffers are very low right now. If the municipalities, and I don't think they're going to do this, but if they become greedy and start to overtax, people will be foreclosed on. Municipalities aren't going to want to see that happen. I'm sure that they'll keep this in check.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. So that's kind of an overview, just some of the ramifications. And again, not just necessarily for those that are buying and selling, but for all of us in general, that what this market can kind of do. Want to continue that. Last week I said we were going to do this as our main topic for the podcast. And we dug into it, and there were so many other factors that come into play and so many different things that are affected by the market itself that I think we can do a two-parter with it.
Oh, absolutely. There's so much information out there.
And you actually kind of briefly touched on it in this episode, and I'd like to expand it on the next one, of people are being priced out. First-time home buyers are being priced out. People aren't able to get that first house like they used to be able to.
And there aren't enough homes for sale for the population in general, let alone first-time buyers who are hit disproportionately. Part of it is due to the fact that there's just not enough property out there for first-time buyers, and that is directly related to the fact that builders have no incentive to purchase or to build properties valued at $200,000, mm-hmm. you know, $185,000. There's just no margin there. Most especially, if you think about it, the average price of a home to construct or to build increased $37,000 over the course of the past year due to and as a result of lumber costs. Well, how is it that a builder is, or somebody who's constructing homes, how is it they're supposed to make profit when they're trying to sell a $200,000 property? Where's the profit in that? There's just none. If you're paying $37,000 just in increases in lumber costs alone this past year. So municipalities need to step in. The federal government, I think, is going to have to step in because there is a crisis that is looming, and it's further creating polarization between the haves and the have-nots.
So we'll dive into that even deeper next week on the podcast. We are doing our best, though, Mark, to try to put some more properties out there.
I've been doing this for a long time. I've been doing this for 30-some years. I've never experienced anything like this before. But the number of properties just continues. And it's across all price points. About 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I was starting to tell some of my higher-end clients, you know, I think the market's starting to soften a little bit. And just for the record, our average sale price is in the mid to high $200,000. You know, we love selling properties, you know, that are over $1 million. But, you know, it doesn't happen all that.
Sure.
I just left a showing, a property that I don't even yet have on the market for sale, $1.85 million. We had some buyers coming in from outside of the area. We walked them through. We're selling that property today for $1.85 million. That's just insanity. And so it's been an insane and a crazy market across all price points. And you're experiencing that. I mean, Joseph, do you want to?
I know. Oh my goodness. I don't know if I have the heart. Yeah, I know. Just went in on an offer that was, let's see, it's not scarred into my memory, $108,500 over asking price that we did not.
And the list price on the property was?
It was $249,900 on that one, I do believe. Not that I have these things that I dream about every single night.
And you wrote an offer 50% over asking price.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And were you laughed at? I think they threw rotten vegetables at you?
Yep, I was put into the county square, and everyone threw tomatoes at me.
Yes, yes.
It's wild. It's wild out there, that's for sure.
But I will say, it's wild, but it's also exciting. And, you know, not only is it fun to experience all this, but we're putting in such long hours. But I'm really enjoying the fact that we're putting in the 10, 11, 12-hour days because the days are so full of excitement, and you can feel the energy and the enthusiasm on the part of buyers, on the part of sellers, the camaraderies that are being created. Really, really wonderful.
It is. So if you want to experience a little bit of real estate porn, as we like to call it here on the podcast, you can certainly go over to the website, marksiewiec.com, marksiewiec.com. That's where we have all of our listings posted. If maybe you're thinking about diving on into this adventure with us.
But I'm not thinking of listing, Corey. I'm thinking of buying. Do you know of any good real estate agents that could help out?
Let's see. Huh. There's this guy. He's on a podcast that I've heard of somewhere. Yes, would love to work with you, certainly, if you are even thinking about buying. Let's have a conversation about it. Literally, absolutely no pressure whatsoever. But reach out. You can find me on the website or reach out directly. Again, my number is 607-341-1230. You tried to do that thing where you told my wife to get me to change the number to a 585. It's not happening.
Yeah, well, we're still working at it. We'll make it happen.
Listen, my wife wins 99.7% of the arguments, or not even arguments, should I say, but conversations that we have. I got to have my 0.3%. You got to give me my 0.3%. This is in there. I'm planting my flag. I'm keeping that. I've got to have something to hang on to. So again, thank you so much for listening. No matter where you have found the podcast, subscribing is absolutely going to be so helpful for us. But even more so is to tell your friends if they're interested at all in real estate, and specifically here in the greater Rochester real estate market. So again, next week on the show, we'll dive into, again, it's something that's been coming up every single episode, the divide between the haves and the have-nots. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that people who used to be able to afford that first step, that first home, to start to build equity and to build wealth, are not in that position anymore, and they can't, and they're being pushed out from it. And what needs to be done about it exactly? So we'll get to that more.
We'll solve that problem, yeah. And find a cure for cancer between now and next week.
Okay,
yeah.
So all right, we're going to do that too. 45-minute podcast.
Oh, there we go. Sounds good.
We can solve the housing crisis in 25. Anything else, we got to go over. Thank you so much for listening. This is Open House with Mark Sewick and Corey James Moran.